Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to another edition of the Q Podcast. And today we're going to jump right in because you're going to get to hear two different 9-minute talks. One's an interview that I did, and the other's going to be followed up by a talk. But the topic is this. It's how do we understand how to really think about the most vulnerable children who are affected by war, who are affected by the refugee crisis, who have, you know, in many ways gone through incredible trauma and don't always know how to process it. And we know as Christians, like one of our greatest concerns has to be for the vulnerable, has to be for the orphan, for the child. And in this talk today, you're going to get to hear from two different, very different perspectives, what it means to think about that. What does it mean to think about that when you're an American possibly, or you're in a Western nation and this maybe isn't your experience, and yet you know that we're called to care about it? What do we do? Because all of this can be so overwhelming as we think about the refugee crisis and we think about all the millions of lives that are displaced and all the pain and trauma that people are going through that maybe we can't relate to because we've never been through something so horrific. And yet today you're going to get to absorb in what it's like to live that way, because in our first conversation, I'm going to interview someone who grew up as a refugee, somebody who was a child in a refugee camp who had to have this experience and can remember it and is going to recount for us what that was like. His name is Khalil Sliman. And Khalil is somebody who essentially grew up in that kind of an environment. And he came through life as a refugee and having to figure out how they were going to eat, how they were going to take care of themselves as a family. But as so many amazing stories turn out, now Khalil gives his life to helping other refugee families actually have their needs met. And it's just an amazing story of how that happened. He currently is a part of the World Vision team. He's their response manager for the Iraq and Turkey operations and their Syria response team. So he's got a lot of experiences right now on the ground in the biggest humanitarian crisis that the world has seen in decades. He's going to also help us understand what they're doing specifically with children. And this is what I didn't understand about this crisis is, number one, so many of these children could spend up to 17 years in a refugee camp, which is their entire childhood. It dramatically affects the way they think about the world, the way they think about peace, their anxiety, their stress. And so we're going to hear a little bit about that. And then following that, we're going to hear from the president of World Vision, Richard Stearns. And Rich has been an amazing leader at World Vision. They're one of our main partners every year with Q and the work that we're doing, because we believe they are the most educated on what's happening around the world internationally. They have over 40,000 employees working in all of the hot spots around the world, the spots you'd never hear about where there's poverty, and they're trying to cultivate life in those societies and flourishing. And they're providing not only schooling and education, but medical needs and food and shelter. They're doing such hard work and good work, and they're so respected. I mean, the U.S. government looks at their best practices and says, how can we help you do more of that? How can other agencies model what they're doing after what you've been doing? They're committed to long-term effects of their work. It's not just a short-term. And so for all those reasons, getting to hear from the president of World Vision, Rich Stearns, who also wrote a book called Hole in Our Gospel, that I think is an important read for people to see, because it explains so much of the Q philosophy on why we as Christians have to care about these issues. We do not get a pass. God's called us to show up and restore where things are broken. And that's what their work does. But Rich is going to give you a great perspective on understanding through the eyes of a child what life is like in not only the Middle East, but around the world for those who don't live like many of us do in Western societies, who have much more wealth, much more opportunity, very different experiences. And sometimes we just kind of need to get this right in our face and understand what the rest of the world's living like and how we can be a part of a solution to these problems. So let's listen in first to my conversation with Khalil, and that'll be followed by you getting to hear Rich Stearns for 9 minutes just share his heart for the child.
So Khalil's an amazing story. For you, this was your childhood. You grew up you were in a land that was terrorized by war. You actually remember, I know, seeing your dad stand in the food lines for food as a child. Talk to us about that experience.
So basically, I'm engaged with responses since 32 years. But this time, I'm on the other end of the response. My family, during the Lebanese war, we have lost everything. We were displaced from our village. We had to stay at school at some point. And yes, I remember everything about food distribution, hygiene kits. But I didn't know what is this. When the first time I start to do response as my work, this is where all the memories started to flood back, to come back, all the memories, all the sad memories. And by God's grace, I was able to transform these memories to be a motivator, to be an inspiration for me, so that I will be able to help the families that I was part of these families before. It gave me some kind of a better to shape the way we are doing responses, to shape my leadership, to be able to understand more the context of this family, to try to gain their heart and their mind, because this is how we do a good response. We need to listen from them. We need to be one body, even if we are responding to their needs.
Yeah.
But listening what they want, involving them in the decision making, all these things, I didn't know about it if I was not part of them once in life.
One of the things we know, though, Khalil, I mean, going back to your childhood, is that there's incredible trauma that refugees feel. And it's so hard for anybody here to probably appreciate that kind of trauma of what actually happens in the child's mind, what happens in the parent's mind. Could you just help us understand a little bit about how affected a person is when they go through a traumatic experience like you did?
Let me tell you a story. I was hearing my grandpa praying for my father to have peaceful days. And my father was praying for me to have peaceful days. And now I'm praying for my children to have peaceful days. So can you imagine how many generations in our area we are praying for peaceful days, and these peaceful days are absent? So this is the kind of trauma we are living in. Can you imagine myself and my family, and for sure my generation, we only think what the future of our children will be. Is it so vague? We are not seeing yet the light at the end of the tunnel. What will happen to them? Are we going to stay where we are?
Right.
So living these conditions is a trauma by itself.
Right.
How come the children that are living even the war, the kidnapping, the unforgettable bloody incidents? I will give you another example. Can you imagine how they are learning math where they are under some controlled area? A tank plus a tank equal two tanks. If we have three bullets and we want to kill two people, how many bullets we are going to use? This is an example how the children are living in our area during this crisis. And for sure, they will not forget it. They will try to live with it, but they cannot forget it. For this reason, World Vision is intervention is basically on child protection and child-friendly spaces, and something that we may let them live with this memory, but go out of their trauma.
Just help us peek into your world of what you guys are doing on the ground. Help us to see like what you do, how you try to respond, kind of practically, what does it look like for you to engage these children, these families?
Yeah. So basically, you don't need a need assessment to know the needs, because the needs are enormous. These people and these families, they need everything. They need food. They need water. They need education. But most importantly, they are missing the social safety. They are subject of all kinds of abuse, sexual abuse, dropping out of school. And unfortunately, not everyone on the ground, like the people in here, we have the good heart and we want to help. Some people are using and abusing the refugees for their own benefit and profits. So World Vision, being a child focused organization, we are mainly focusing on providing the life-saving materials for these families, but also to work on their spirit, to work on their emotion. And we have a lot of examples how children, they came to our child-friendly spaces and how we work with them like on every single day.
Yeah.
So, and the transformation we saw after 6 months or 3 months. One family three children have seen their parents killed, and they came walking, running out from Mosul with their relative, with their uncle. The boy, he was bullying his sister because he wants to defend them. He was so afraid. So when he came to child-friendly spaces, he was not collaborating, he was not listening, he was not talking, he was only beating his sisters. This is where our psychologists and our expert people, they intervene and they work day by day, week by week, not only with this child, but with the family that is taking care of this child, so that we can change and we can see the transformation. And God is blessing this work. God is blessing this work, and we are seeing transformation.
The unique thing about the way you focus, and I know World Vision has put a ton of focus into the child interaction, because we know that most children who are refugees, it can be up to 17 years of living through this experience. As you said, your grandfather, father, you, the prayer for peace for your children.
And still going.
Because it's truly the only thing that they know. It's the only kind of culture that they're experiencing, and the trauma is horrific, and you guys are trying to create these spaces to help children actually be children. Talk just a little bit in our closing minute about the way in which you guys are doing that with children.
I will express this by an example also. When we first, the children came to the child-friendly space, we tried to give them some paper and colors so that they draw something and, you know, we can understand what is happening with them. They were afraid to draw, fearing that somebody there will be hurting their relatives as well. The kind of work that we need to put with these children, because building a child is building a nation. These children will be the leader of their nation later on. Some people, they don't want to go back because they are afraid. They are terrified. We are recruiting experts. We are having psychologists. We are putting all the experts that in-house inside World Vision, bringing them from all over the world. The international diversity of World Vision helps a lot in bringing people that we really need. And as I said, this will be nothing if God's hand is not at work. Because his hand is at work, he's blessing this work, and we are really seeing transformation. And I really invite anyone to get in touch with us to talk more about it, and also to visit where we are working, to have a closer look and see how things is happening.
Well, Khalil, I just want to thank you on behalf of everybody here, for somebody who's had the courage to not only grow up in that kind of a space and go through your own trauma, but then now to turn that to serve others. It's beautiful, it's redemptive, and while we sit in a comfortable, air-conditioned room, we know that you and your team and your staff are working so hard on the ground to meet so many needs, and it takes a partnership for these kinds of things to work. We need each other. And so just thank you for your work. Let's thank Khalil for being with us today.
You know, first of all, I want to thank Khalil, my colleague from World Vision Iraq, for being here today and for sharing his powerful story. You know, as a child of war, Khalil was deeply traumatized, but somehow he was able to overcome that childhood trauma in his life. You see, at a critical point when he was a refugee child, he was able to embrace hope instead of hatred. And it actually changed the course of his entire life for good. Today, I want to help you all here better understand the impact of trauma and violence on children. Right now, I want to do a little thought experiment. I want you to close your eyes for a minute and try to remember how you felt on September 11th, 2001. Could you just close your eyes and remember exactly where you were and what you felt? And do you recall the horrible, horrible images on the TV screens? The visceral shock in your gut that you felt, the fear and the trauma that kind of gripped our nation on that day. Our world seemed to be coming apart. Everything seemed to be coming unhinged. And our very way of life felt threatened. You know, my daughter Gracie had her 10th birthday that week on September 13th. And I remember thanking God that the attacks did not happen on her birthday because of the dark shadow it would cast over her every single year for the rest of her life. You see, 9/11 was our national day of trauma. But it was over in a day. Just imagine what it would be like to wake up to a 9/11 in your life every day for more than 6 years, because that's been the experience of the children of Syria. Every day disrupted by the crack of gunfire and the roar of warplanes. Every day hearing the wails of wounded people. War becomes your world, your reality. Fear becomes a constant companion. There are now more than 15 million refugees and displaced people because of the wars in Syria and Iraq, and more than half of them are children. So what does constant exposure to violence and fear do to a child? In a refugee camp in Lebanon, I was shocked by some of the crayon drawings done by the children there. These kids' drawings were tacked up on the wall, and I actually took a few pictures with my iPhone. And here's one. It's a scene that a child could not imagine unless she had experienced it in her life. I want you to notice the sadness of the mother and father and the children in their faces as they gaze down at three small dead bodies. There's a warplane overhead dropping bombs. Can you imagine a child drawing this? And then the next one, death is also the theme of this drawing. The bloody corpses lying in the street with incoming missiles and more bombs. That day I saw dozens of drawings just like these. This artwork says everything about the experience of a child in war. But you see, this kind of trauma does more than just crush a child's spirit. It actually changes their brain chemistry. You might be surprised to know that I actually have a bachelor's degree in neurobiology. Now, back when I got my degree, we diagnosed your problems by reading the bumps on your skull. So I'm not being asked to do much brain surgery these days. But I do know that stress can permanently change and damage a person's brain. And the developing brains of children are particularly vulnerable to trauma, especially sustained trauma day after day, month after month. You see, extreme stress or toxic stress triggers high levels of cortisol, a hormone that prepares the body for the flight or fight syndrome. So high levels of cortisol, and these high levels of cortisol may remain for years in a person's system if they're exposed to that kind of stress. What does it do? It leaves children unable to manage their stress and their fear. They're susceptible to anxiety and depression. They struggle with memory problems, learning disabilities, difficulty controlling their emotions. These are the kinds of things that that happen to children who experience that kind of stress in their lives. We know from the research that without intervention, children of war are likely to grow up to be troubled, addicted, underemployed, and possibly violent adults. And this makes them especially prone to radicalization. They often experience this profound sense of hopelessness because they have little to live for. And here's the thing I want you to hear. When you have nothing to live for, you're much more attracted to the idea of something to die for. So imagine for the moment the catastrophe in the making when 7 million children, an entire generation of children, are being formed in this crucible of constant violence and toxic stress. This will be the future price to be paid from this devastating war. We could be baking the next ISIS. But there is another possibility. Children can also be amazingly resilient. They can overcome terrible experiences if they're shown kindness, they're provided tangible help, they're given reasons to believe that there's still goodness in the world. If a traumatized child is placed in a supportive environment, he or she has a good chance of recovering from that trauma. Khalil told you a little bit about our child-friendly spaces at World Vision, one element of our larger response to help refugees in the midst of their trauma. These child-friendly spaces provide an island of safety, if you will, as they're loved and cared for, these traumatized children. Our compassionate staff enable these kids to feel safe, to give them a sense of routine. And they also provide creative outlets, playtime and stimulating activities, drama, song. Research has shown that this helps build resilience in children. Studies were done of our child-friendly spaces by Columbia University, and they found that children who participated in these activities had far better psychosocial outcomes than children who did not. You see, we can change the trajectory of their young lives. Now, I want to take you back to the drawings I just showed you. You see, those kids were actually asked to draw two pictures that day, one of their lives after the war, which you saw, and one of their lives before the war hit their families. I just showed you the after pictures. So let's look at the other picture these same children drew of their lives before. I want you to notice this one, the big smiling sun over the house on the left, the red heart above, the happy people holding hands. What a contrast to the sorrow and the death on the right side of the picture. And here's the other drawing, showing a world so peaceful it's dominated by the ultimate symbol of peace, a dove. This is a safe, happy world, full of life where children can play. And these drawings show us the two possibilities for these kids, a life of violence and rejection or a life of promise and hope. You see, in a real sense, what these children become will depend on how the world responds to them in their time of need. Will they be rejected and neglected, or will they experience compassion, care, and healing? And who will stand in the gap for these kids? You see, I believe that the Church of Jesus Christ can and should be the ones standing in that gap. Why not us? Unfortunately, many American Christians have bought into this toxic political narrative that the refugees are to be feared and banned, or maybe just ignored, just as bad, instead of being loved and cared for. But you see, I have hope. I have hope because there are already some real heroes in this story that we can be inspired by. The courageous pastors and churches of the Middle East who have found themselves inundated with wave after wave of desperate people showing up at their doorsteps. I want to tell you about one pastor I'll call Joseph. He runs a church on one floor of an old building in Lebanon that we would call a tenement. He's leased one floor of this building. He and his congregation go into the streets to tell the refugees they are welcome there. They invite them to church on Sunday to share a meal and to worship God and to pray. And for people who are the most unwanted, unwelcome, unloved people in the world, this gesture of love is almost too good to be true for them. And so they come. About 300 refugees, mostly Muslim, come to Pastor Joseph's services every single Sunday. I was stunned by this news from Pastor Joseph, and I said, how is this possible that Muslims would come to your church every week? And he gave me a big smile, and he said, the secret is love. We just love them, and they come. You see, churches like Joseph's are on the front lines of the greatest humanitarian crisis in our world today, and they need our help. I want you to look into the eyes of this child. Is this little boy a future extremist, or is he a future doctor? And how about this tiny little girl? Will she fall into the hands of human traffickers, or will she become a future teacher? And what about this boy? Is he perhaps the future diplomat who will someday bring peace to the Middle East? Or is he just collateral damage with nothing to live for, just waiting for someone to offer him a gun and something to die for? In a real way, the answer depends on all of us. Now, we all know the familiar expression that actions have consequences. But I want to tell you today that the corollary is also true. Inaction has consequences. So here's my question for you today. Action or inaction? What will we choose? Thank you very much.
I always love hearing from Rich Stearns because it brings this bigger global perspective. It's not a place I always live in, and so it always helps me. And I hope it's helped you today to not only hear Khalil's story, but then the bigger picture of how do we help the most vulnerable? How do we create these child-friendly spaces that actually encounter children in the most important moment of their life to help them escape the trauma, work through it, process it, and get to experience life as a child? If you don't get to experience life as a child, there's so much psychologically, the rooting that's needed, the ability to have empathy, to relate to others. So many of those things are so critical, and I love the work that they're doing there. And on a bigger level, I just want to say, if you're a church leader or you're part of a church, this crisis amongst refugees, this huge humanitarian crisis, is one of those that just isn't going to go away. And I know it can be hard because there's so many crises in the world that it's hard to know how to get involved and how to help. Well, the thing I want to say to you about World Vision, because I want you to think seriously about how can your church engage on this. They make it so easy for you to engage, and not because you don't have a heart to do more, but there's only so much you really can do as a church. You can't just go over and fly to the Middle East and show up and do stuff. Some people are able to do that and called to do that, but it's actually very difficult to get there. It's very difficult to get the correct documents and to do the things you'd have to do to be there. But the way we can show up is actually by providing funding, by helping the people on the ground have the access to the best resources, the best food and shelter and anything that they can do to help these families in their moment of need. And if you go to qideas.org/worldvision, you'll actually see how we've partnered. And one of the things I'm so excited that they've been doing is something called Refugee Sunday. So in your church, you can actually spend 10 minutes of a service, and you could do that this summer. You could plan for the fall, where you just say, look, our church this year is going to at least give 10 minutes to understanding a little more about what's happening outside of our comfortable world and actually give us a chance to get involved. And so your people get educated on this refugee crisis. They also understand how they can participate. You could take up a special offering that can go to support and serve so many of these children and families. And so I'd encourage you to do that at qideas.org/worldvision. Well, until next week, I hope you have a wonderful week as summer is in full swing here in America. And for those of you around the world, I hope you're enjoying your week and that you're encouraged. And we'll be back next week with another great talk and conversation. So until next time, have a great week. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.